Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
Farrington, a bit prettier, a bit more lifted, Donnelly Creek being a bit more masculine and more a little bit more brooding. Now, on the opposite end of the Anderson Valley, way up north, we work with two vineyards up there. One is not on the map right now, but the Wiley Vineyard, where we get some Pinot Gris and a little bit of Pinot Noir. And then we just added a new vineyard in the last few years called the Wendling Vineyard. And Wendling is up near Wiley in the north end, so you're going to get a cooler climate expression of Pinot Noir from that area. And so from all these different sites, we work with different varietals, and we piece together, you know, a couple different wines. So for one, Chardonnay, our Anderson Valley Chardonnay is a blend of Savoy Vineyard fruit and Farrington Vineyard fruit. So it's kind of two sites coming together. Really with this wine, we're trying to express, and I think all the Fell wines really, we're trying to express the energy of the Anderson Valley, the freshness. And with Chardonnay, as we all know, you kind of have this really broad spectrum of styles. And you can have the really lean, clean style and the really oaky, buttery. And again, with that philosophy of trying to accentuate or showcase the Anderson Valley's energy and freshness, we went more towards the fresh and clean style. Not all the way. We didn't go stainless steel fermentation. We found that to just be a little bit too austere.
Yeah.
So we do barrel fermentation on this, but it's all neutral oaks, all barrels that have been used for, you know, some of these barrels are 8-10 vintages used now. They're old barrels that our winemaker Ryan Hodgins was using from his early days when he was working in the Anderson Valley. So about as neutral as it gets. We let everything age in that oak on the leaves. We don't do a lot of stirring. We just want a little bit of that breakdown to happen to add a little bit of textural component. But the other main thing is we limit the malolactic fermentation. So we just keep these barrels really cool, and we try to avoid the wine. You know, we don't encourage it to go through malolactic. We bottle it up, you know, after about 9 months, and that's it. It's good to go. So, you know, when tasting this wine, I'm always just in love with those fresh flavors, and you can really get a sense for what Chardonnay, the grape, actually is. And it's a style of wine that I think has been now for a few years, definitely on this, you know, resurgence, especially with, you know, younger drinkers, people or folks that are just getting, you know, fatigued from the big oak butter bombs of the world.
You know, you've highlighted so many things. First of all, you know, anybody that drinks wine, wines from Anderson Valley have been exposed to, have heard those names. Those are vineyard designates for some really blue chip producers, you know, like William Selim and such like that. So your fruit sources are as good as it gets. It just, you know, when you bought Savoy Vineyard and I saw the press release, I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Because I know the quality-minded folks that you are. So I was very excited.
Well, that's what we've been trying to do, right, is continue to just be a steward of that vineyard. I know that's a word that gets thrown out a lot, but really that's what we're trying to do is just maintain the quality of what that vineyard is and even increase it where we can. We still sell fruit from that vineyard to six other wineries, Ray de Couteau and Fela, Pay, Autour, Litterai. I mean, Litterai's been making Savoy since the beginning, right?
Yeah.
So it's great that we have this group of vintners that are all still interested in promoting what and promoting how great that vineyard is. So we do make single vineyard wines as well from all around the valley. For Chardonnay, we do make a single vineyard Savoy Chardonnay, which is a smaller production wine that's kind of only available at the winery. And that one goes through a little bit of malolactic. There's a touch of new oak on it. It's more substantial fruit-wise to begin with. It's still very clean and crisp, but it has a little bit more textural components along with a little bit more sort of weighty characteristic that, again, I absolutely love. And then for the Pinot Noirs, it's a combination of Farrington. We do a single vineyard Farrington, single vineyard Donnelly Creek. And then I mentioned the Wendling Vineyard, which is a new vineyard we started working with. And the first vintage of that will come out with the 2017s. And I'm very excited about that wine because it really showcases, when you taste all these different vineyard designates, how different the Anderson Valley is from one end to the other. And so, you know, it's a great place again to grow those varietals. And should also mention, we make a little Pinot Gris, which is fun. Nice. You know, you don't see a lot of Pinot Gris coming out of California, but
no.
Anderson Valley is a great place for that varietal. And that fun thing about that wine is the fruit source is the Wylie Vineyard and Donnelly Creek. So it's kind of opposite ends. So you get the really light and crisp flavors from the fruit up north, and then you get the more ripe fruit core coming from the south. So two places coming together to create a really balanced rendition of the wine. It's very Alsatian style. It's, you know, it's basically fully dry, and it's just like, yeah, it's delicious. It's mouth-watering.
I'm gonna need to taste it.
Yeah, we'll get you. I'll get you a bottle on the way out.
You know, I really love some of the points that you made about Chardonnay as a varietal. It's such a great canvas mm-hmm. for the winemaker. It's probably a variety that takes on the vision of the creator more than any other,
right.
if I may say that. And the range, indeed, is really vast. And what you've done with this Chardonnay, we're drinking the 17, by the way. You guys, it's so clean, crisp, fresh, as you mm-hmm. pointed out. It's floral. It, that word energy that you use, that tension, is very mm-hmm. much there. I feel like, you know, I could sit and drink this all day. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt, based upon the acidity, that it will lay down nicely as well, if you have the patience.
Mm-hmm.
I know I don't. This would not last in my cellar.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's such a beautiful effort. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks.
You know, aesthetically speaking, I'm looking at the label. It'll, of course, be a picture for you to see, but better mm-hmm. yet, go and get a bottle or two. There's a flower. It's a very clean, aesthetically pleasing label. And there's a flower. Is there a symbolism to that?
There is, yeah. So the flower is a tulip. And not only was that, you know, my grandmother's favorite flower, but we kind of wanted to include something like that, something from a garden, because she was a big gardener. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, making wine, you know, working in her garden. And again, this is Alberta, Canada. It's not an easy place to grow anything, but she had this beautiful garden where she'd grow all kinds of things. And that's where she spent a lot of her time. It's part of, you know, a place where she was the happiest. The tulip for us, you know, just, it represents her. It represents like rebirth and new life. And for Canadians, it's kind of the first flower that blooms. And so it's always a big deal. Like, hey, that's winter's coming to an end. Hooray. So that's why we wanted to include it on there. And we're actually working on a label redesign, which will come with, I think, the 2018 releases. So mm-hmm. I've seen some couple mock-ups of that, and then the flower is going to be even more pretty. So yeah, keep an eye out for that. But I really like just, yeah, the real kind of calm aesthetic that it has.
What a great homage to a great lady. What an inspiration.
Yeah.
Everything you've described just feels happy and positive, and you know, this day and age, we could use a lot more of that.
Sure,
And now that I would never be able to look at the bottle the same, at this flower, this tiny flower that means so much.
Yeah, absolutely. It means a lot to us.
On the Pinot side, you have, again, your vineyard choices. You mm-hmm. have creme de la creme that you work with.
Mm-hmm.
From everything I've tasted over the years, light hand in the cellar.
Mm-hmm.
You never overwhelm your wines. And they're very vintage specific, so you can always taste, you know,
yes.
the year.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that. That's exactly what we're trying to accomplish. So I'm glad that you've observed that.
No, you really honor the site in the best way possible. And Ryan, you know, like you mentioned, the previous brand was called Bergo.
Yeah.
In case you just heard of it about the wine that I have. And, you know, he's done such a great job with them.
Yeah.
That there's that continuity. I'm so glad that he stayed on board with you and creates the wines that are very pure.
Yeah.
You know, they're almost intellectual for me at times, your Pinot Noir specifically. You know, cerebral. And
they
have just so much to tell at any point. You know, I used to, well, I still do, open your wines, and when you first smell and taste them, there's one picture that emerges palatally and mentally, and then as it sits in a glass, something else happens, and then, you know, throughout the course of the time that you're enjoying the bottle, there's so much to consume, like I said, not just from the obvious point of view, but really, it's a conversation in a bottle. And I think that's part of the philosophy, right?
Yeah, I mean, again, we want to have wines that fully express where they come from, and that's not just the region, but it's also the year and the conditions that were felt that year.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ryan's been a wonderful guy to have on board through the transitions that the winery has gone through. And not only a really talented winemaker, but just like a brilliant leader and operator. Like, he knows how to run a team. And I mean, he manages the vineyard and the contracts and every, like, he's really more than just our super excellent winemaker. You know, he does a lot for this company. So we're really blessed to have a guy that talented working for us. And really, Mao is we're really getting into the exciting part of Fell. This is where, you know, now we have this deep understanding of the vineyards we worked with. We have a new winemaking facility that we built out in Sonoma that we completed for the 2018 harvest.
Oh, I didn't know.
So
that.
Yeah, prior to that, doing a lot of custom crush, which provides a lot of challenges. But, you know, we made that investment because really we just knew that we needed to. We needed to give Ryan all the tools necessary to make the best wines possible from the best vineyards possible. We apply that knowledge here, or that philosophy here at Cliff Lady. And so it was time that we did that with, you know, both of our brands. So it's a really exciting time to start drinking these wines.
You know, there are several people, several families that's been instrumental in Napa Valley. And I think the same is true for Anderson. It's a small valley overall. Yeah. And there's some, you know, presence there for many years of sparkling wine houses and such like that. But the Pinot culture, when it started developing, it was very tentative at first. It was beautiful that in this nation form, but, you know, the resources were not the same initially, by and large. And what you've done for Anderson Valley, I think, is pretty remarkable. You really put your heart and soul, your investment, and your point of view, which from everything you describe is all about stewardship.
And, right.
So I think you've done a lot.
Well, thanks. You know, we're very fortunate that we own the property we own, and that again, there was such an amazing group of vintners that built the reputation of that vineyard, and you know, for Richard Savoy for planting that vineyard and experimenting, you know, just having fun and planting different clones and, you know, just developing this beautiful site. And you know, that wine, we'll get there in a couple, but we'll taste the Savoy. I mean, that wine just blows me away. But why don't we shift to the Sauve Blanc?
Yes, I'm not going to complain about that.
Yeah.
I'm an avid fan. I cannot stay away from that wine ever.
Yeah, this is such a, like, nostalgic wine for me, because it was just, it's always been a wine that we've made. And it's just, it was always the wine that, again, we'd start the night out with this wine. You know, we would meet up with my dad, my sister would be in town, and we'd open a bottle of Cliff Lady Sauvignon Blanc, and then we'd go to dinner. You know, and it's just, it strikes all those nostalgic points for me. And, you know, we haven't changed the style too much over the years. I'd say 2012, when Chris Tynan came on to start making the Cliff Lady wines, he started pushing for more of a Bordeaux Blanc homage. And we'd always worked with Semillon in a certain amount, like, you know, a couple percent. But, you know, Chris and Remy, too, our COO, you know, they're so well connected in the valley here. And they're just, hey, well, you know, a really great place where you can get some Sauvignon, or some Semillon. Yeah. Why don't we work with a little bit more Semillon? And like I said, we've always had a couple percentage, but being able to get into the 10-13% range, you really start to feel that essence on the palate, and it just builds the roundness of this wine and balances off the acidity of the Sauvignon Blanc. You know, we've always used a combination of neutral wood and stainless steel, the concrete eggs we've had here at the winery since 2008, I believe. So it's really been a part of our program for a long time. But, you know, this to me is really, since Chris came on and since we made those decisions, now where I feel we're really making what I feel is one of the best Napa Valley white wines, you know, Sauvignon Blancs. It's just, people love this wine, and it's great. I love sharing this with people. It's one of those crowd-pleasing type wines that catches people a little off guard. Not unlike the Chardonnay with the fresher style, a Sauvignon Blanc that has a little bit more fullness and a little bit more length on the palate is not something that you typically experience.
So to validate that, I just had a conversation a couple of days ago when somebody asked an intriguing question. If somebody only drank white wines, where would you send them in Napa Valley? Because, you know, traditionally it's considered the red wine country. And first thing that popped into my head, go to Cliff Lady.
Nice.
because it is so consistent, and because over the years, again, aromatics, always phenomenal. Very feminine, very floral, multifaceted. Always love that. But the texture of that wine.
Yeah.
It's like cat's paws.
Yeah. Nice. I like that. I'm going to use that. That's great.
So yeah, it's an irresistible wine in my book. And the fact that you've had, you know, such a stellar winemaking team at this facility as well. I know there's a lot of people that went through stages and worked here. I mean, you're kind of a bit of a hub of talent. But Chris has been a staple since 2012, and he certainly has a style and point of view, and I'm so glad that he's here.
Because we are too.
Yes. He's definitely a very talented winemaker, but also, again, low intervention. I never tasted a wine made by his hand that I felt was too much or something that, you know, was forced or disjointed. It's always very, very integrated. It's always synergistic, and a lot of it is fruit and the connections you have in the valley and the estate that you have. You know, it's also cellar work, obviously, the tools that you have. Barrel choices, the concrete eggs, like you mentioned. But at the end of the day, it really is a brand philosophy for me, you know, that permeates everything, that culture that exists within. That's part of what we're tasting. That's part of what we're experiencing.
That's exactly the mission, you know, and I think that's why Chris has been such a good fit for us, is he just, his philosophy and our vision just completely meshed, you know, from the very beginning. And, you know, he's proven to be, I think, in my opinion, one of the best winemakers in Napa Valley. And, you know, he could, after now making, you know, a handful of 100-point wines with not only our label, but his own personal label as well, you know, he could go somewhere else and consult for 10 different wineries if he wanted to, you know, but that loyalty that we have with him, and I hope he has with us, is what's going to continue to bring out just beautiful wines from our state here and all the vineyards we work with in Napa. The attention to detail he has is just, I've never seen it, you know, in any other winemaker. He's just obsessive about keeping things on track, and you know, again, a light hand and just working with good estates and really pushing for that, pushing for quality, 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 quality all the time.
Isn't that fantastic when there's such a sense of symbiosis? When that human factor, that human terroir, in addition to...
Yeah, I like that.
They play well together, don't they? Because it creates a lot of value. And, you know, physically when you're tasting the wine, you know you're tasting something special. You can't always break it down, and, you know, for an average consumer, they're not going to maybe ruminate over it for hours like us nerds, but they do sense that there's something special going on. And I think that's where it came from, is the fact that you've attracted, you've galvanized this energy, both from the land and from people that touch it.
Right.
And touch the plants. I mean, there's so many people that actually are involved in the process.
Yeah.
And each imparts something.
Right.
And then you have this product at the end that is such a pleasure to taste.
Yeah. Well, it's, I got to hand a lot of that to my dad. He's just had a really solid vision from the beginning. And, you know, it's things like employing our vineyard crew year round so that, you know, we can offer them benefits and take care of them.
Oh my goodness, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, it is. And it's reflected in the quality of the wines. Like, you can taste that, you know, these vineyards have been well taken care of. They may not be as meticulously, beautifully manicured as, you know, some other famous vineyard managers out here, but that's okay. You know, it's more, they're doing the right things in the vineyard at the right times. And that gives Chris the ability to make the right decisions at the right times. And that, again, like you were mentioning, that synergy, that relationship, and that communication that we have through all of the members of our team, and that loyalty, and that just, you know, passion for the work that everyone's doing, that's what you taste, you know? And that's what I taste when I taste these wines, and that's why I love what I get to do, because I get to go out and share this with people and tell them, like, hey, so much hard work went into this, and you can, you know, that's why it tastes good. It's not, you know, it's a combination of a lot of things, but I like your term, human terroir. That's, I think that's something that is very well expressed through our wines.
Thank you. And what a pleasure it must be for you. How proud are you to present this portfolio in your line of work?
Yeah, the term is we don't have a dog in the bunch. Any of the wines that we make, and if I'm ever pouring any of them, I'm always proud to pour any of them. So I'm very lucky to have that. Not everybody that sells wine has, you know, can say that. So
your dad made a major commitment all the way back in 2005, and he followed through every step of the way, and he was also quite creative about it. And I know your fans know intimately about the musical aspect of it, but right. for those that don't, I'm going to make you do the yeah. whole yeah. presentation and the significance of that.
Yeah, sure. So again, with the maps, I like my maps,
but love the maps.
You can go on our website, either on ladyfamilywines.com or cliffladyvineyards.com, and pull up the maps. So at Cliff Lady Vineyards here, we have 60 acres, and it's all the Bordeaux red varietals. So, well, that was true up until last year. We just planted a tiny little block of Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc. So that's going to be years away before we can even make wine from that. But I do have to put that in there. So
no, I love it.
The majority of our vineyard is planted to the red Bordeaux varietals, with the overwhelming majority being Cabernet Sauvignon, since, you know, we are in Stagsley District. That's what makes sense here. But really, our property breaks down into two different parcels. We have a hillside vineyard, which we call the Poetry Vineyard, and then we have the Twin Peaks Ranch, which is on the valley floor, right around our tasting room. And the great thing about our property is it's this really sort of long, you can see on the map, there's this long yeah. stretch of land from the hillside down, it reaches almost to the Napa River. So the soil structure is completely changed from one end to another. And that's what allows us to have all these little blocks of different varietals. And we can grow Merlot here, we can grow beautiful Malbec and Cabernet Franc as well, with all the Cabernet too. So it's really a unique site for Stag's Leap. I don't think there's many other properties that have the ability to do that. But the whole rock and roll thing, I mean, my dad came out here 2002, start the winery, big fan of wine, big fan of, you know, art, and you can see that around the property when you visit, but big fan of rock and roll music, you know, specifically classic rock, the stuff yeah. that he grew up with in the 60s and 70s. And he wanted to bring that to the experience to Napa. You know, he just felt he'd been in enough tasting rooms where it was just really, you know, kind of stuffy,
yeah.
you know.
And it was a bold move at the time.
Yeah, and he just felt, you know what, I like to listen to rock and roll, and I like to listen to good music when I drink wine, and I'm going to do that in my tasting room. So when the tasting room opened, that's what we did. We kind of developed a bit of a reputation for that, and then it was maybe, you know, not much later, maybe a year or two after, you know, we opened, my dad was really starting the process of replanting the vineyard. And he was working with David Abreu at the time, who had become mm-hmm. a friend of his after being out in the valley for a couple of years. And they're looking at, you know, the vineyard maps, and they're looking at, you know, block one west, block three east, and all of these different vineyard blocks. And David's rattling off, okay, we should probably replant this one, and this one maybe we should address, you know, in 2005. And, you know, they're looking at the map, and my dad's just like, okay, I don't know where block three west is, or, you know, I can't keep up with what you're talking about. Like, it's just, it doesn't mean anything to me. And David was like, well, Cliff, you know, people name their blocks whatever they want. They name it after their, you know, favorite animals, or they name it after their children or whatever, figure it out. And Dad's like, well, I'm gonna name it after my favorite songs.
So I love it. I never get tired of hearing that.
Yeah. So we have 40 some vineyard blocks on our 60 acre estate, and each of them have a different name attached to them. So, you know, we have a Bohemian Rhapsody vineyard block. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a Shoot to Thrill, some AC/DC. We have Led Zeppelin out there with Whole Lot of Love. You know, Stairway to Heaven, obviously, we have to have. But you have some other gems in there, like Smells Like Teen Spirit. You know, you have some Nirvana. Just last year, I was able to finally make my mark on the vineyard. We had a nice new block that was planted in 2017, and I was like, Dad, we got to have a block that appeals a little bit to a, you know, a younger generation. And I made the art. I was like, look, these guys are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They've had a long career. They're multi-generational, you know, platinum records. And I was like, we got to pay tribute to the Beastie Boys. We got to
nice.
Do it.
I love it.
So there was a lot of choices from their catalog of music. But for me, Intergalactic was the first, you know, big rap song that I ever heard. And that just was like, it blew my mind. And it set me into sort of the direction I've gone musically and the things that I've been interested in with DJing and turntablism and things like that. But Intergalactic, I was like, we have to do Intergalactic. And what a great name. So he was a little hesitant, but he went for it. So we do have an Intergalactic block now.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's exciting. And every year, I guess the other cool thing about this, so the map was kind of the first place it started, and then it started to evolve from there. In 2005, we decided to make a special wine where we highlighted two of the vineyard blocks, and we thought, how fun would it be to blend a couple blocks together and blend the name of the blocks together and then kind of name the wine after the blocks. So it's kind of a bit of a, you know, it's not necessarily a single vineyard, but it's kind of our play on that idea. And every year it'll change, we'll pick different blocks, but today we'll taste the Moon Fantasy, which is the 2015. And so we're using fruit from the Dark Side of the Moon vineyard and the Dear Mr. Fantasy vineyard. So Moon Fantasy, that's how we came up with that.
Very cool.
The label on that one, as you can see, is interesting. It's a Marshall amp stack. So it's, you know, the classic sort of speakers that the rock bands would use.
Yes.
And still a lot of rock bands use. And so that wine is all about, you know, our personality and having fun. And the thing that I really like about this wine is that it's just kind of, you know, it looks like the fun wine, the fun, you know, we're not taking ourselves too seriously. But what's in the bottle is some of the most serious wine that we put out from this property. Because most of our wines, we make a Stags' Leap District Cabernet, which is more or less a blend of all of our vineyard blocks. Mm-hmm. We make Poetry, which is the best of the best from the hillside, and, mm-hmm. and again, a Bordeaux blend. But this wine always kind of sits, you know, it sits in between those two, and it's more, again, more vineyard specific. So I love this wine because you really get to taste, you know, Cabernet from our property, whereas the others are more Bordeaux blends.
Yeah.
So this is one to me that really appeals to me because I love California Cabernet.
This was a short vintage, correct? But pretty intense
it was.
One. Yeah.
Yep.
So, yep. I'm excited to try it. And the backstory is just so cool because you are unique in that sense. No one has been, you know, and people get creative with labels
yeah.
and such like that, but to really be so committed and fusing your passions
right.
together in well, such a good way.
And I think that's the important part is it's genuine. You know, it's not a huge marketing play or anything. It's like, first it was playing the music because we loved it. Then it was the map. It's kind of fun. And then it was, well, maybe we should make a wine. That's kind of cool. Like, let's do something fun like that. And then, I mean, now it's evolved to where, you know, you come to the winery and you can really experience it. You know, in backstage tasting lounge, we have some really cool artwork that we feature, and it rotates throughout the year. We have different artists come through and display their stuff, and it's always people who are tied to the rock world in one way or another. Right now, the current exhibit is the artwork of Bernie Taupin, who wrote, you know, a lot of Elton John's big hits back in the day. So it's all his personal artwork, and it's really cool stuff. We've had the Jerry Garcia exhibit, you know, we've had the Grateful Dead exhibit. We've had a lot of these really great rock and roll tie-ins. Grace Slick from Jefferson Airplane has some personal artwork that she does, and she's let us have it in our gallery. And it's great for people that come visit. They can get this whole experience of wine and art and music, and, you know, all of those things are subjective, whether you like them or not. And it just really provokes that conversation, whether it's art, music, wine. And luckily, a lot of people like wine, a lot of people like rock and roll, a lot of people like really nice art. So, you know, when they come visit Napa Valley, and they, even the folks that have never heard of us, when they stop in, they're just like wowed with how different it is.
Yes, and so, the outdoor sculpture, just even the visual stimulation. You have a gallery that changes exhibits, but even having a glass on the patio, and there's a couple of sculptures that are way cool. So it's definitely a must stop, without a doubt. You will love the ambiance, you would love the wines, but I think the most instructive part is what you already highlighted. It's the passion of people behind it, and it shows up.
The conclusion of this interview can be found in the next podcast, already available for your download. Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palette Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson.